We had Billy and Patah left alone on the Great Spacer to have a chat for about 50 minutes while the barrier was being closed. Billy had just asked Patah about some of his comments on religion. And Patah was explaining that he felt that it interfered with the individual's free will, and he felt that it was a shame that it had been so exaggerated, that Christianity had changed the truth so much since the time of Emmanuel, that it distorted things so much that the individual really didn't have a free chance to learn on his own, to learn properly about the truths of creation. Well, I can understand Patah's viewpoint, being a very developed being and coming from another society that benefits from all this great knowledge and so forth, but also, like he acknowledged, that we do have to learn on our own, that it's important for all of us as we move along our own path of evolution, that we experience things for ourselves and we find out for ourselves. The problem seemed to be that Patah felt a sense of urgency, that the planet Earth, technically, we were becoming very advanced, combined with the fact that we were moving into this new age period where things are greatly accelerated, and that soon we would find ourselves out in free space and perhaps communicating with other intelligence, other life forms, that he felt it very important that we kind of grow up faster, that we were going to have to get over this period in our development here very quickly, because if we are to go out to move out into free space touting Christianity, he says there are many races out there that will not, they just will not put up with this. They won't put up with this sort of ignorance, and they're liable just to wipe out our race. Or possibly, he says, it could work the other way around, that we could find ourselves coming in contact with races even less developed than ourselves and try to influence them, teaching them Christianity. And he felt this would be very harmful to other planets. On our own, if we wish to follow our own path of evolution and find and develop on our own, then we can do whatever we like, as long as we're confined to our own planet. But when we start influencing others, then they felt they had to draw a line there. So they were very hopeful that the main thrust of their mission, which was to educate us a little bit spiritually about life and so forth, that they could be very effective in those areas. So again, they were spurring Billy to get out into the public and to explain things and explain the truth about things to people. Now, the truth can be pretty harsh sometimes. I know here on Earth, I have no idea how many different real religions and belief structures we have. Must be quite a few of them. I mean, all over the planet with this 180-some-odd different languages and races we have, you can find, you know, a variety of belief systems, you know, all over the place. So we are at a difficult time on the development on our Earth where we're coming together because communication is throwing us together, communication and technology. It's a very difficult time for us to come together and start, you know, becoming unified in our beliefs and so forth. It's going to be a very difficult time indeed the next few years. So those were his basic comments. It turns out one of their nice surprises they had for Billy next was that they had some things to do which was going to require them moving to different areas of the universe, and Billy would be allowed to see other planets, other galaxies, and other civilizations. So he was, of course, quite excited about that, and he wanted to know if he could take some pictures, and they said, of course you could, that they'd be able to stop at certain areas and explain some things to him, and that he would be allowed also, in some cases, to get into the small ships with Semyasin. He could go in and actually investigate some of these planets. He thought that was great, but he had a couple more questions, and he pressed Patah again about this idea of learning and about truth. And Patah remarked to him, well, you know, when we make our influence on the people of Earth, as we do with any other planet, we have to be very careful about the amount of information that we actually let people have. And they try to very carefully ascertain the ability or the levels of knowledge and evolution of the people on a planet before they start exposing themselves, exposing their knowledge. Now, with Billy, for instance, they've gone to great trouble, and as we're going to hear on other tapes, they've actually, Billy's gone time traveling into different periods and different historical times to actually see for himself and know his own truth. Billy's been exposed to information that might be kind of difficult for a lot of the people on planet Earth to understand. So when they talk about the types of information that they want out into the society, bear in mind that they are considering the planet as a whole. Even though many of you may that are listening to this tape probably are far more advanced or more open-minded than many of the people on this planet, this information isn't directly just for you, it's for the entire planet. And while you may be wanting more and needing explanations of some things, many of the people on this planet can't even accept the fact that ships are coming. If Pleiadian ships were to fill the air tomorrow, there would be a lot of panic in many areas. So they have to consider everybody. So when they do that, they are very slow and they are very careful about trying to let information out into a society so they don't really overload people and cause panic and fear. For instance, Semyasi and Billy's former contacts with Sfath and Askit, they're all being very careful to go step by step and really explain the basics to Billy so that he could grow and learn these cognitions himself. You see, it's not enough just to hear information, like you're hearing things right now on this tape, but it takes a lot more than that. Once you hear information on any particular subject, you don't own that knowledge yet. These are just words. It's just information that comes into your mind. In order for that to become part of you, you have to go out and experience it. Something you may hear on this tape or some information may influence your thoughts a little bit, and they may be just what you need to know right now. Maybe it's something that your mind is really just waiting to be fed with. And you go out and you start experiencing it. You change your life in some way because of some information. You start living differently. You start affecting people differently. You start reacting to things differently because of this piece of information. Well, what happens when you do that? It now becomes part of you. Now, if you were to receive information which was far too advanced for you, it would really have no effect. It's like an education. If you're going to learn to, say, be an architect when you're a freshman in college, you don't immediately open a book up from a senior class student and start reading, you know, the more sophisticated great secrets of architecture. They wouldn't mean anything to you. While it might be fascinating to read them, it would not be the proper learning process because you've jumped past all the basic knowledge that you're going to need to actually be an architect. So it's necessary for you to go back and open your freshman book, isn't it? Well, learning things in life is the same way. But once you go through the 4 years of architecture, learning everything, that knowledge is now yours. You have learned it, lived it, it has become part of you. Anything you learn in life works the same way. And be it information from extraterrestrials on spiritual development or just textbooks on architecture, the learning process works pretty much the same way. This is another area that they had a problem with many of our belief structures, is that you are pushed information onto you and told you that this is the way it is. It's not only untruthful, but it doesn't give you a chance to learn on your own, to experience on your own, and so forth. Every individual on the planet should have his own opportunity to have his mind opened up with spiritual information given to him so he can search for himself, make his own decisions, because we're all on different paths of evolution. And again, they mentioned that on this learning thing, they thought it could be dangerous for us to, you know, spread the religion around. So they've been very careful about the types of information, but kept reaffirming the idea that they felt it was time that we actually heard the truth about life and about creation. And as Billy has just experienced going through eternity, here is certainly one of us anyway that got to experience it firsthand. So Billy has real knowledge of his own, having contacted creation and felt what happened there. Gee, wouldn't it be marvelous if we could all experience that? So, Billy had another question, too, about the governments on Earth, if any of them were actually in contact with any extraterrestrials on a regular basis. Now, remember, we're in 1975 here. Patah said no, that there were no governments on Earth having open contacts with extraterrestrials. Now, in 92, this might seem a little curious because many of us are becoming to believe that the American government, at any rate, is probably having ongoing contacts or relations with the people from Zeta Reticuli, sometimes referred to as the Greys. We don't know for sure that they are, but it seems to point to that. There's a lot of evidence that the Greys are here abducting people. But interestingly enough, in 75 anyway, Billy had been told that the Greys are coming here, that there are beings from Zeta Reticuli coming here, and that they do abduct people from time to time. But Patah says at this point that the governments really aren't in open contact with any of these races. And by the way, that was reiterated in 89. I asked Billy about that again, if he had any information about the American government being involved with the beings from Zeta Reticuli. And he said, no, that it was greatly exaggerated, wasn't what it appeared to be, because we're hearing a lot of stories about how our American government is covering up the fact that they're working with the aliens. The Pleiadians say no. They say that they're not. As a matter of fact, it says in Billy's notes that, and it doesn't mention the American government, it says that several governments are actually experimenting, though, with flying discs of their own. They have some of them working. And in quite many cases, these flying discs that are reported by people and thought to be extraterrestrial are our very own. He says no governments are having actual open contact with ETs. If they were, they wouldn't be trying to hunt down the ships. Besides, he says that the technology of the Pleiadians is high enough. If they were having any trouble with the American government, there would be no problem with them being able to make their ships safe, and they could stop the American government from, you know, bothering them if they wanted to. He did comment that not beam ships, but flying disc, as he called them, were being built and had been built on Earth since 1941. He said in Germany the first one was designed in 1941. Its first test flight was in February 1945. At that time, that ship was able to go 12,500 meters high up in the air and could travel at speeds of 2,000 kilometers per hour. It was obviously built in Germany during the reign of Adolf Hitler. He says at the end of the war, when Germany was losing, that the Germans destroyed pretty much all they could of the flying discs so nobody could get a hold of them, but they weren't entirely successful at this. That much of the gears and quite a few of the plans were discovered by the Allies, causing the Russians and the Americans both to have a little idea what they were doing, and they had copies of their designs, and that these governments had continued to try to design and build some of their own. Currently, he remarked, and he didn't say the American government, he says that some governments are building flying discs up to 100 meters in diameter, and that they had, now this is in 75, and they were using, as a propulsion system, they were using explosion-type motors, and referred to them as atom-splitting motors. And that you get the impression in the book that he's talking about some sort of either an atomic reactor or a nuclear reactor sometime in these types of ships. Because he says there's a lot of problems with them. They don't fly very well. They frequently crash and have to set down. And they are plagued with the problem of radiation. That quite often people who work on the ships will suffer from radiation illness. And there are several instances where the ships are forced to land because of problems, and the people around the ships then working on them or even attracted to them that may come up to them can also suffer from the radiation burns. He says frequently, oddly enough too, which kind of surprises them, is on some occasions these flying discs developed by the governments, when they may have been seen or they are forced to land and people see them, they will explain to the people, they will come out of the ships and tell them that they are ETs. They'll tell them that they are gods and they are from other planets. And why they would do this, I'm not real sure. But he says it happens frequently. In some cases, they will even go to the trouble of kidnapping the people that see the ships so the people can't tell anybody else about it. And wherever these people wind up, I have no idea. But he says quite often, flying discs that are seen in the air and so forth are mistaken as extraterrestrial when they're really not. It's kind of a strange thing, isn't it? Billy said he knew about this for many years, but he had been told to keep quiet about it. But Patah told him that there's no longer any reason to. Then now's a very good time for him to reveal this and to let people know it, because too many people are claiming to see extraterrestrial ships and claiming to have contact with extraterrestrials, and Patah says it's just not true. Most of these so-called extraterrestrials are ships of our own and people of our own. Well, they continue on now, the great spacers moving through space again, and they're going to have a series of stops, and they're showing Billy some rather unusual things. Their first stop, and there are some unusual names here, we don't know how accurate they are, but they're names that Billy's giving to destinations here, so he has some reference. And the first place they stop is some galaxy called Nessar, N-E-S-A-R. And Semyasi is explaining to Billy the problem there, that it was destroyed years ago. And he says about 967 years ago, people from this particular planet, I guess you could call them Nessarians or something, they came to Earth on an expedition. And they actually had an expedition on Earth where they stayed for about 50 years. After that time period, after studying all our culture and our religions and our way of life, they returned back to their own world. Apparently their technology wasn't very good because Semyonovsky said it shows that it took them 4 years to get back to their world. They had a lot of trouble getting back. When they did, they were explaining all about the religions that they had learned about on Earth. They were explaining all about what they had done for the 50 years that they had been there. A lot of arguments broke out in their world about the religions. You know, I can just imagine what they were arguing about. But they sent another group of people back to Earth for some more reconnaissance to find out some more about it. They returned 5 years later. By the time they got back, the different planets of this race had already fallen into a war. They started building churches. There were arguments about one religion than another. They got into a terrible war with one another, and a couple of planets became destructed. The war didn't stop there. It kept fighting, and pretty soon other planets fell in, and they caused so many problems in the magnetic fields and orbits of several solar systems when the fighting started, the part of the universe started falling into itself. Apparently, when you upset the magnetic stability somehow of a solar system or a galaxy, things started going wrong and more planets started falling in. As more planets started falling towards the center, it threw off the magnetic field of the entire galaxy, making the orbits of many systems unstable. And over the course of some time, many planets started falling in, and the center part of the galaxy now was in total destruction with thousands of planets, which had literally fallen together in like a large clump. And they had cited this stability as the sort of megalomania that, you know, can get run away with when war breaks out over really ridiculous issues. They continued on, and this next area they went to is called a galaxy called ASAP. It's spelled ASAP, so I guess that's the galaxy as soon as possible we've always heard about. There's a planet in there called Desom, D-E-S-O-M, and it was a planet with human life on it. And Billy was allowed to, through the screens, they got pretty close, and he could see the grass huts and so forth. And living here on this planet were people you might consider in the Middle Ages. One interesting thing to note here that Patah mentioned to him that they have a moon that, that's about ready. Well, not about it. They predicted within 3,200 years that the moon would crash into their sun and would cause some problems there. And it would throw their planet out of orbit. And Billy was concerned. He said, well, what would they do? Because they're, you know, a dark ages or middle ages sort of development here. Patah's mentioned that there should be enough time for them to develop and develop technologies well enough that they would be able to escape from their own planet. If they had not by that time and they would be watched, then others would come to help them and get them off of there so that they weren't destroyed. The next section they go to, there's a galaxy called Nepon, N-E-P-O-N, and there's a star system there called LESA, L-E-S-A. And the reason they took him here was because this was in an entirely different region of the universe in a different galaxy where things were far larger. And here there were two giant planets. And I suppose looking out the window of a ship, it'd be hard to understand how big they were, depending on how far away you were. But Billy said he was also stunned at the size. They were just huge. And he saw a small moon just circulating around one of the planets. And Patah commented that that small moon was 524 times bigger than our planet Earth. So you can imagine how big the planets actually were. One of these planets had human life on it. They made a leap, a hyperleap, in that solar system, and they had to make a leap within the system because it was so big. This is an area of the universe where the planets are far larger than they are here. It was at this point that he commented that living on Earth, we really have no conception of how big things are, how long they are, and how time actually works. The distances, things would just stagger us. Most of us live a very brief lifetime of 50, 70, maybe 80 years on here, and that's really our conception of what a life cycle is. And we have no concept of what it's like to, like, see something a million years old or 5 million years old. And Patah mentioned here some insights into spiritual growth. He mentioned, wouldn't the Earth person be surprised to find out that the average person on Earth is over 100 million years old as a spirit form. And when he talks about as a spirit form, he's citing here again that we are spiritual beings going through a series of material lives. So he's saying that we'd be very surprised to find out that, our spirit forms have been creating material lives for over 100 million years. He says it takes 10 to 20 million years just for a developing spirit form to reach a level like of conscious thinking, to be a rational thinking human being, that we really don't grow very much in the early stages throughout each physical lifetime. Well, that's pretty understandable when you consider and even look around you at most of the people on the planet. They're really not gaining much at all as far as knowledge and spiritual evolution. So it's not hard to see where it would take an awful lot of lifetimes to really get somewhere. He says it takes literally billions of years for us to live through the entire physical existence to the point where we no longer need the physical body and move into what's called light body existence. Normally, that entire period could take over 70 billion years. Then he went on to explain a little bit to Billy about how the creation works, and this will be done much more in detail on the creation tapes, but I'll give you a little idea here. The universe that we live in, which they're calling a creation, has a lifespan of 311 trillion and 40 billion years. This is the entire spiritual length, not the physical length of the universe. For the universe is first a thought, then it's an idea. Then the idea is manifested into like thought energy. That thought energy then evolves thicker and thicker and becomes fluffy matter. Fluffy matter then evolves into gas. Gas then evolves into solid matter. Remember from earlier that matter and energy in a universe are pretty much the same things existing in different forms. That the entire universe is solid matter, which is coarse matter as they define it, and energy is fine matter. So the universe itself goes through a long stage of evolution as fine matter before the physical or coarse matter of the universe actually evolves. So when we hear 311 trillion years, the vast majority of that is in fine matter or energy before it actually evolved into the planets. We're currently in the 47th trillion year of that cycle, by the way. He says that a creation, one cycle of expansion, evolution, development and contraction is called the Great Time, and that's the 311 trillion and 40 billion years. A universe, or a creation, they're meaning the same thing here, that a creation will go through this cycle seven times. Each time it goes through a period of expansion and contracts and pulls back into itself, it goes through a sleep period, equal to about the same amount of time that it was expanding and contracting. It then repeats that cycle again, and it goes through seven cycles of that, these seven great times. Each time, I think there is some algorithm here that they get longer each time. It says in the mathematics in here, though, that the seven great times, though, are equal to seven times 311 trillion. That's a huge number. Now, it will go through that cycle seven times. They have learned and understood that from their own science and from other races. And he says this is the creational formula of time, that this is what the universe is doing, this expansion and contraction on this scale of sevens. And this is where the numerology of the creation comes from, these numbers of seven. So they have learned that the cycle that the universe is going through, which we'll talk more about later on, is repeated throughout all evolution. It's repeated in humans and animals and everything, that the human beings go through also through seven levels of evolution, five of them physical, two of them non-physical. That the human being then will go through, imitate more or less the cycles of what the creation is doing. This is why we have life cycles, and we'll talk a little bit more about this later on, but I want to kind of get the idea into your thinking here. That we as spiritual forms go through a series of material lifetimes until such time when we no longer need the physical existence, it no longer provides us the information to make logical things that improve our evolution. We go through then continued development, which lasts billions of years, and then it's kind of like graduating. At a certain point then, our spirit form will merge with other spirit forms and become what's called a we-form intelligence, where spirits come together, lose all awareness of the physical being, and eventually become part of creation itself. And this will be our first time we may talk about this, but this is where the concept of creation and us becoming a one with gods or part of creation comes from, that we actually do. The Pleiadians are telling us that the creational energy of a universe is actually spirit forms that have evolved to that level of evolution and now partake in that, that you and I can look forward to that too. We will evolve through material lifetimes till we get to the point where we no longer need the physical. We will evolve into being spiritual entities. Then we will come together as group consciousness. And at some point in time, then our consciousness, along with many others, will join up with the creational energy. And this is what Billy was experiencing when he was in eternity for that 7 minutes. Okay. There was another question while they were moving on a jump to another area. Billy wanted to know what was this thing about this number 666 and the Antichrist and how did that relate to Christianity? And they were remarking, well, there's some misconception about that. The general thinking is that the 666 is the sign of the beast and represents the destruction of Christianity. And they want to clear that up, that no, that's not what it means. That actually Christianity itself is the destruction of the truth. That the 666 stands not for the destruction of Christianity, but for the destruction of the truth about creation and what's really going on in the universe. And that Christianity actually is the destruction of the truth and has been since the year 189. He says what happened is, and if you work your numbers correctly, you'll find that Christianity was actually formed and came into its own being in the year 189. This was the year that they changed the original writings of Emmanuel, changed his name to Jesus Christ, and actually formed the Christian religion as we know it today, and over the years have slowly made minor changes in it to empower themselves greater and greater. That began in the year 189. The year 189 has the basic number of 18, and it has a 3 value, which results in 666. And if you follow the years of all of the major Christian changes and planning and so forth, you'll find that every one of these years has that basic number value. And that's where the concept actually came from. Later on, when we discuss the Talmud a little bit, you will hear in all about how Emmanuel actually described that in his original teachings and prophesied how that his name would be changed, how his teachings would be altered to serve the purpose of the church, and how it would affect our society. So the 666 doesn't actually mean the destruction of Christianity, because Christianity is not true. As you'll hear more on the Talmud tape, the Pleiadians will have led Billy to the truth about Christianity, about Emmanuel, and to his original writings, which do explain the New Testament far better. So with that, they're moving on to a new area, and they come into a new galaxy. It's called Mara, M-A-R-A is the name Billy used. At this point, by the way, they were 30 trillion light years approximately from Earth. And here Billy was seeing kind of an unusual planet that was rather dark. There was a lot of volcanoes on it. And the planet itself was kind of making its own light from all the light of these volcanoes and had a very weak sun around it. And Billy noticed that there was, he was looking out the window at the planet and noticed that down around a volcano, there was a flight machine, he calls it. And Semyazi says, so there is, let's try to make contact. There was another flying disc or flying ship of some kind out there. Well, she tried to make contact with the ship using this language that she spoke. Billy had never heard the language before. And after attempting to make contact to no avail, Billy asked her, says, that language you were speaking, what was that? And she says, well, that's a, it's called a sign language, but it's done with words that represent pictures. And it's a universal language that most all advanced beings understand. It's a way of speaking that represents symbols to the mind that are universal. This may somehow be tied with the language of key or sign that people talk about using in meditation. And Billy said that he had no idea that there was a language connected to symbols and sign. She says, yes, there is. That she didn't have time to explain it to him at this time, but it does exist, and they use that quite frequently when they need to communicate with people that they don't know. It's the universal language. They make one more leap, and Billy starts to notice that they're all doing these leaps awfully close to planets. And he says, you told me before that normally you have to be a 153 million kilometers from a solar system before you make these leaps because it may affect the orbit of the planets. But they don't seem to be showing that caution now, and he was curious as to why. She says, well, we have some new technology on this great spacer, and that by benefit of the Timmers, Ascot's people from the other universe who helped them design this, that they've been, I guess you'd say, privileged or open up to some new technology which changes the way they do things. In their regular Pleiadian craft, yes, that was true. that it was necessary for them to get 153 million kilometers outside of a solar system before they would make these jumps into hyperspace, and they could affect planet orbits, so they didn't do it until they were out of the safety zone. But the technology that came along with this new great spacer was something different. That this great spacer did not need to use hyperspace to move large distances. That actually what it could do, it had a way of moving, and this would only work apparently within galaxies. It wouldn't work in the free space between galaxies, the way I understand it. That the ship could generate, was the word they use, what are called time canals. And that this was easier to use than hyperspace. Apparently what the ship did, it didn't even have to accelerate to great speeds. It could somehow generate some sort of canal, or move into some sort of canal where time did not exist. It did not need to break into hyperspace, cause a time dilation like the older Pleiadian crafts. Actually, the Pleiadians didn't even know how the technology worked. They'd been given the technology by the Timmers, who were far in advance of them by several hundred years technically. The ship operated off of that principle, and they were just figuring it out themselves. But the advantage was they did not have to speed up and break into hyperspace. That the ship somehow generated into a time canal, and it would move at huge distances. It would transfer this 153 million kilometers just in a part second, and they could just be wherever they wanted to. The drawbacks to it were that apparently the distance that could be traveled was somehow related to the energy of the galaxy itself and to the size of the galaxy. That generally this would mean they could only make these jumps in the range of 210 to 735 million kilometers at a time. So they're very small jumps in relation to the large jumps that they could do with hyperspace. Because in the hyperspace they could actually move from one end of the universe to the other very quickly. But these time canals could be opened up in the galaxy somehow. It was somewhere right in here that Billy started noticing that he wasn't getting hungry or getting thirsty. And he had a question about, why is this? I've been here quite a while. And he checked his watch and noticed that he'd already been with them for 30 hours. But yet he had not become very hungry. He hadn't become thirsty, and he wasn't very sleepy. Well, it was explained to him that the food had a lot to do with it. And they noticed, they drew his attention to the fact that he had eaten some fruits with them earlier on when he first got on the ship. And they commented that the fruits that he was eating would calm down his urges for hunger and thirst and could actually hold those urges back up to like 90 hours. This probably gives us some clue into their long lifespan, which can be up to 1,000 years. Also, that they are somehow able to retard the aging process, and they're probably able to slow down all the body functions. So here we have some example of how they may be doing it. They also mentioned that the air inside of the ship was conditioned just like the air on their planet, and they had somehow learned to control the air also, so it affected sleep, that they really didn't have to sleep very much. Maybe just a couple of hours every 20 or 25 hours or so was all they really needed. And they didn't sleep very much, and the air had some effect on that. They had raised the oxygen content, and they put other things in the air, which somehow it allowed them not to sleep so much. So Billy was in kind of a controlled environment. Then he noticed on his watch that he's been gone like for almost 2 days, and he starts getting a little keyed up. He says, "Oh, my wife's going to be so mad. I told her I'd be gone like for 18 hours, and now he's been gone, you know, for like an extra day." And he's going on about how she's going to like call the police, and she'll be out looking for him. She's going to be enraged. Where is he? And they comment, "Well, don't worry that this ship has the ability to actually move in time." So when they take him back, even though probably 3 days will have passed because they still had some things they wanted to show him, even though 3 days will have passed out here, then when they take him back, they'll make a time shift and take him back so he'd only been gone for 20 hours. Well, Billy was kind of scratching his head and made some references also to other situations where they had moved trees and caused people not to even remember that the trees had been there. In one particular case, they damaged a tree. He came back. The tree was gone. They moved the tree's time so it didn't even exist in a time period where it could get hurt. They even changed the memories and thoughts of people in the area somehow so they wouldn't even know that a tree ever existed there, but they allowed Billy to remember. So Billy's kind of babbling on about all these things like, oh, sure, everybody's going to remember, going to believe this. Yeah, they're going to believe this when I tell them about I can move in time. They're going to believe that a tree was there and now it's gone. He says they're going to think I'm crazy. Well, they get to another galaxy, and Billy calls this one Aratom, A-R-A-T-O-M. It's in the system of Neb, and there's a planet called Kartag, K-A-R-T-A-G. The reason they went to this one, Billy had asked if there were planets out there just like Earth, in approximately the same stage of development, going through the same problems that we were. And they said, yes, there is, and they wanted to show him one. As a matter of fact, it was so close to what was going on here on Earth. Actually, they were a little beyond us. They were having, I guess you would say, an atomic war, a nuclear war. And when they came into the system where it was at, they explained to him that this planet was just like ours, very similar in looks and style, and looked about the same way, and that there was a terrible war going on down here on this planet. And Billy says, why aren't you going to stop that? He was noticing that there was massive destruction. And they commented, yes, that the great nuclear war that's always been fearful on Earth was actually going on here, and that these people had developed missiles and weapons and bombs that were even far greater than the ones that we had come up with. And we've done some pretty good work on that. And that Billy could see that missiles were hitting major cities, there was major loss of life, and they were literally ruining the planet. Just as they left the Great Spacer, he wanted to get a closer look. And they got off into Semyossi's ship and started moving towards the planet. They got in very close, and just as they did, one of those very large missiles came right by the ship. And the ship was actually jolted a little bit, and Semyossi had to grab the controls. And she remarked that, my, these missiles are very dangerous. They're much larger than the ones that are built on Earth. And just about that time, the missile that had gone by them exploded, hit a city below them, and there was massive destruction. Just as the missile had hit the city, a missile was launched from that town at the enemy and came right up by them and shot off into space. Well, apparently, its projection had been thrown off due to the explosion just as it had been launched. And Billy remarked that the missile looked like it was escaping out into free space. What are you going to do about that? And Semyossi says, well, I'm not going to do anything about it, but my father will on the Great Spacer, and as soon as he gets out into a little farther out into free space, that he'll take care of it, which actually that he did. And what happened was kind of unusual. Semyossi moved the little ship they were in up close to the Great Spacer so Billy could watch, and she told him that he could take a picture if he wanted to. Now, what happened was a little unusual. Billy could see the runaway missile moving up into space, flying up into the air, and suddenly from out of the Great Spacer, some sort of energy, and it was color, it was like a golden yellowish color, it just shot out from the Great Spacer, and as soon as it came out, it went around the missile, and it formed almost in a square or a rectangle right around the missile, the energy itself did. It just locked right around the missile, caused the missile to explode, and the explosion was contained, apparently, within just this area. And Billy noticed that when the explosion went off, it was very fast, and it didn't seem to blow out very large for being such a big missile. And she says, well, two things. One, the energy that formed the block that came out caused the thing to explode right away. It did not explode very large because out in free space, there's no atmosphere, there's no particles, there's no air or whatever, for the explosion to actually expand in like it does when it's down in an atmosphere. And apparently the energy that was emitted from the Great Spacer to do that also caused the blast not to last very long. It was very short. But I suppose a blast really doesn't last very long anyway. It just looks like it because it kicks up all the dirt and the dust and everything, which it doesn't do out in space. So having no atmosphere out there, the whole thing seemed to go by very quickly. They stopped at one more place here, this galaxy that Billy calls Beberus, B-E-B-E-R-A-S, and there's a planet there called Niebuhr, N-E-B-E-R. And he was particularly fascinated with this one because this planet was kind of like in prehistoric times, and it had giant animals on it. And he's always been fascinated with that, with dinosaurs and other things. And as soon as she explained to him that The planet had prehistoric animals on it, and the largest. It was a planet that had among the very largest animals that people had ever seen on it. And she remarked to him that ETs come from a lot of different areas of the universe just to see these planets in this area, because there are several of them, apparently, which have these very, very large animals, even much larger than the prehistoric animals ever grew on Earth. And Billy says, "You mean like saurian birds? There's giant birds here?" And he was kind of fascinated with that. And she says, "Of course, they're huge and they're very dangerous." So Billy immediately rattles on how he's not scared, that he's packing a 44 Magnum with him and he wants to get out of the ship and he wants to touch, you know, one of these birds. And Simiosity is just really surprised that he would have any interest in doing that, because she, of course, wanted to stay safe inside the ship. And that they said, "Oh, you can't do that. These animals are, you know, they're very dangerous," and so forth. And he went out in the long run and was able to, like, convince her to stun one of the animals. And Billy actually got out in some sort of flight suit or something, went out and touched one of the big dinosaurs. So packing his 44 with him all the time. There were also humans on that planet, which wasn't natural, because normally there is never life forms on a prehistoric planet like that. And they didn't know of any place that they'd ever ran across where there was ever human life developed at the same time as there would be prehistoric life. But she commented on this planet was a little unusual, because a group had come there many years before that to study the planet and wound up staying there. And in so doing, their equipment had rotted and they weren't able to leave the planet. They were stuck there. And what happened was, there was a pretty good number of them, apparently. They had a little colonization there. They had children. Their children were raised without technology. And what actually happened was they were kind of technically degenerated, where they had become like a degenerated race. They lost all their technology and their knowledge. And after several hundred years, they become like prehistoric people. And fallen into hard times. So there was a race of people living on that planet who had actually degenerated themselves by being stuck there and were sharing the planet then with this these prehistoric animals. Well, back on the Great Spacer, after seeing this, Billy once again is left alone with Ptah for a while, and he had some questions about government in the Pleiades. Like, you know, he was well aware of how governments worked on all the many different countries on Earth, but he was a little curious how the Pleiadians were doing it, because apparently they'd had peace now for almost 50,000 years. So, of course, he was a little curious how they managed to pull that off. Well, to begin with, and it probably goes without saying, that government in the Pleiades is quite a bit different than government that we would have here. Worked a little bit like this. Thousands of years back, about 50,000 years back, they finally had a great war where it was kind of between the spiritual people and the military type people. And the spiritual people had actually won out this time, taken control of the planet, taught the people the ways of creation, and the place had become very peaceful. And they had built a new system. What they did was, since there are several planets with Pleiadians on it, originally there were three planets with Pleiadians on it. We don't know exactly how many there are today. They live in an area where there are 254 suns. I have no idea really how many different planets there are in the Pleiades, but it's explained that they all work pretty much the same way. Each planet has a governing body, and each planet is considered one nation. They don't have multiple states like we do, that everybody is of one nation on a planet. And that each planet has its own governing body. They have then one central planet, which has their high council on it. This is a special planet, and on the planet of the high council are beings who no longer, they call it in the transmission stage, where they are no longer existing just in the physical. These are people who have lived through the physical times of their life and have evolved to a point where they no longer need the death cycle. Some of them are like half physical and half light beings, where they won't die any longer. They just live for long periods of time and get less and less dense. Many of the beings there now have moved into this collective sort of consciousness, where there are multiple consciousnesses. But most of the people there are just on these stages of development now, where they are beyond the physical. they are in touch with the higher forms or the we forms of intelligence and receive information and suggestions from the higher forms of intelligence. The High Council, then of the Pleiades, these people in the higher stages of development, then make the suggestions and so forth to all the other worlds. And then something kind of neat happens. They don't have voting kind of like we do, but before they make any changes, everyone's allowed to speak their piece, voice their opinions, and if they have any objections, then it's worked out. They do not make any changes in their society until everyone agrees. Now, isn't that an astounding fact? Think of how that would work here if we didn't make any changes in our government until all of us agreed upon it. Well, they've gotten to that point in their society now where the people actually have a say-so and affect change by having to agree on everything. One interesting thing to note here, too, is that they brought up the fact that no one on Earth is really in touch with these higher forms of intelligence, these collective consciousness. These are beings that now are so evolved that they have really very little awareness of the physical, and they don't make any contact with it. You can't force a contact. Ta was just explaining to Billy a little bit how their government worked. Interesting point that when the information is filtered down from the High Council and comes down to the planets, interesting phenomenon where everybody has to agree before they make any changes. Can you imagine that on our own world? When that information comes down, they don't exactly vote, but everyone's informed, and no changes are made in the society until everyone agrees. Okay. We've moved along pretty much through all these areas that they're going to show Billy now. And Billy, while they were moving back, he says that they're getting ready to bring Billy back into the area around Earth. And before they do that, he had a couple other questions, too. He says, Patah, am I correct that on the planet Earth, I noticed that there are some changes in the climate and in the poles and so forth. And I noticed that there are possible effects from the atomic bomb in 1945. It looks to me like it took about 2 years for the radiation for that to move up into the atmosphere and have some effect on the weather. And Patah says, well, that's very good that you noticed that, because most people didn't notice it for years, and the scientists still haven't figured out the actual real effect that those bombs actually had on the planet. He says the first thing that happened was that they haven't even noticed it yet, that we actually slowed down the rotation of the planet, that we're not actually rotating around the sun exactly on our 365-day cycle anymore. That got slowed down just a little. And our orbit is off just a little bit, that we actually moved the planet out of its orbit. They didn't say how much, but it may be a very small amount. But they mentioned that was one of the problems that the bombing brought on. And it did affect the magnetic poles. That if we were to be able to see ahead 1,000 years, that we would find out that the bombs that were dropped in Hiroshima and Nagasaki had the effect of causing or stepping up a polar shift on our axis, that the poles would not roll over, but they would continue in a very slow fashion to keep moving, and that in 1,000 years' time, the North Pole would be in the area of Saudi Arabia, and the South Pole will be in South America. He says in the year 2000, actually, the North Pole will be located at a point right between some city called Deschita at the Red Sea. And I'm probably not pronouncing that correctly. It's spelled D-S-C-H-I-D-D-A. Right between this city and the town, the Islam town called Mecca. That's where the North Pole would be. So that was going to take a long period of time, though. There was no mention at all of any sudden polar shift or of the planet itself rolling over. But the bombs did have the effect of causing this magnetic field to move, I guess, faster than it normally would. So another problem, which they really had never made the connection, was that the atomic bombs that were dropped and exploded actually released some unusual energies, electrical energies, but not like the electrical charge that we're used to. That they are electrical radiation types of energies at very high frequencies. And these frequencies actually affected the ozone belt back in 1945. What happens is this. Normally, that there is a radiation kind of like that comes from the sun, and there's this belt of ultraviolet radiation, or like an ultraviolet field, that normally affects the oxygen and hits the oxygen and creates ozone naturally. Well, the radiation that came off of those bombs at very high frequency affected that. Normally, they said that there, for every 500,000 parts of air, there's usually one part of ozone. But after the, immediately after the explosion in Japan when those bombs were discharged, that the ozone value increased 34 times and had 28 parts of ozone per 500,000 parts of air, which isn't significant. I mean, we certainly wouldn't notice it or anything, because ozone's main function is for the preservation of life on the planet, to protect us from the ultraviolet radiation. That's normally done naturally just by the planet itself. But they said the unusual part was, and the effect was, which our scientists have no idea about and still don't even up to this time period, is that that radiation, that quick acceleration in those high frequencies, actually caused danger to small organisms. And that for a very short period of time, massive amounts of small organisms were destroyed on the planet Earth at that time. Also seemed to affect that band of energy around the planet has something to do with them being reborn properly also. The effect of this would last for hundreds of years and throw off the normal cycle of these small organisms. Right after the explosion happened, when there was this sudden surge in the part level of the ozone, it then decreased very rapidly and the ozone settled to a lower value than it was before the explosion. There was one other effect that that explosion had. It says it caused problems in the Van Allen girdle, this Van Allen belt around the planet. This is where electrons and protons are held in by the magnetic field of the planet and affect very important life functions. Now, these particles exist at a height of about 1,000 kilometers on the average. These are particles that are charged normally by the magnetic field, and they are in constant motion. They are on a spiral course which moves from pole to pole. And this somehow, the explosions which set off these very high frequencies somehow interfered with that and interferes with the natural life functions of these small organisms. Tied into that, which is interesting, there are currently people speaking in colleges now in 1992 talking about the problems with plankton in the ocean down off the coast of South America. The plankton, the new plankton being born in the ocean, is somehow apparently sterile, and it's not producing oxygen the way that it's supposed to. Maybe we're seeing after all these years exactly what they're talking about, that these small organisms, which plankton, by the way, is the major supplier of oxygen on the planet in the ocean, that these small organisms somehow are not being bred or born properly. And this may stem all the way back to the explosion of these bombs back in 1945. So there are problems that we really hadn't even thought about. Billy went on to ask also, since he was being afforded such great treatment here, and with all of his contacts, if there were any others like himself. And Patah commented that currently on the planet Earth, there were 17,422 people on Earth having contacts with the Pleiadians. Now, not like Billy. Billy was the only one they were having physical contacts with. They did mention that they had three other people like Billy around the turn of the century, apparently two women and a man around the 1900s, that were having physical contacts with. There was even a couple of the people they had physical contacts with during those times, but who chose not to come forward, who did not, they were afraid they would be branded as maniacs or whatever by all their neighbors, and they didn't want to. The 17,422 people were not aware they were having contacts. Apparently, maybe a couple of hundred of them might be. These were people who were very sensitive. But for the most part, they broadcast, I guess would be the correct word. They seem to broadcast ideas and thoughts, and feelings that are picked up by 17,000 of us. And that number is increasing all the time. Apparently, people who are open and sensitive actually pick up information. It's not always terribly accurate, but they do pick it up, and that number is increasing all the time. Many people who sense that they are actually in contact with the Pleiadians actually start feeling like they have specific tasks to perform. And this may even be the case in my own here, where I don't think I've mentioned to you. I'll sidestep here just for a second. On one of my first trips to Billy's, I was told it was quite possible that I was probably a Lyrian, and that they were quite sure that felt that I had come to Earth sometime back and some several thousand years back and was part of Illyrian colonization here. And my own evolution was much older by virtue of being Illyrian, which a lot of people here on Earth are. And I was somehow compelled probably to come. Many times I've had extensive dreams, thoughts, images, and visions about Billy, other life forms, and this information. It's almost as if I've always kind of known this stuff. I really didn't even have to study it very well. It was all kind of like I was always part of it. So this may be the case with a lot of people where they've been stimulated by dreams in their subconscious and somehow feel drawn to this information, very comfortable to this information or whatever. So we are probably receiving broadcasts from the Pleiadians and are among these 17,422 people that they're talking about. By the way, none of these people, they say, are in government or in political positions. So apparently they have some control over who receives this too. Otherwise, that probably somewhere in government there would be some people picking this up. So they must be a little concerned about who is actually receiving it. So it's just not random broadcasting. They also mention that the splinter group of the Pleiadians, which we're going to hear more about later on, there is a race of people called Bafath, B-A-F-A-T-H. This is a splinter group split off from the Pleiadians about 75,000 years back. They're human just the same as the Pleiadians, but the Pleiadians kind of regard them as terrorists. During a very violent war many years back, they split off, and there's hardly any of them left, but the ones that are left are here on Earth. And they are sometimes, in the Billy Meyer case, referred to as the Giza Intelligence. I'll tell you more about them later on, but these are a renegade group of ETs that have, and some of them live under a large cavernous area below the Giza Pyramid, which is why they're called the Giza Intelligence. And like the Pleiadians, they are far older, more evolved, and have very strong mental abilities. Their technical abilities aren't as strong as they used to be because they haven't grown. They've been forced to stay here on Earth, and their technology is not advanced very much, but they still have the flying beam ships and are quite often seen in the sky. The reason it's brought up here is that while Patel was explaining that 17,422 people on Earth are receiving thoughts and feelings from the Pleiadians, 723 people at that time were under the influence of the Bafath. Now, when I say influence, the Bafath are instilling thoughts and ideas into people in order for control. We'll hear more about the Bafath later on, but the Bafath primarily have tried to seize control of the planet Earth on many occasions through this mental control. They have not openly tried to take control of the planet, one for two reasons. They couldn't get by the Pleiadians. Plus, their technology is not very advanced any longer, and while they have very strong mental abilities, and they do have flying discs, these discs are susceptible even to our rockets and missiles now. We could shoot them down. That apparently their ships are quite old, they are not a very great technology, and apparently they don't have the speed or the protective screens that the Pleiadian ships do, and they can be shot down. So they've taken to trying to take over the planet through mind control, and have on many occasions controlled certain people and world leaders for certain events. They mention out of the 17,000 that two people that had open contacts that were very legit were Daniel Fry in America and someone named Victor Schauberger, who had just passed away at that time. And they went on to comment to Billy about what a very advanced being Daniel Fry was, who a very old spirit, much like Billy himself. And they painted a picture of this man as being very understanding, very loving, very knowledgeable about creation and what's going on, and that apparently Daniel Fry is quite old now, and I don't think he's really out on the speaking trail any longer, but he is one that Batas says is genuinely legit. Billy asked also, we have life on Earth, cities, people, and so forth. Where's the next closest planet that has human life on it like ours? Patel remarked that it really wasn't that far away. that just 5 light-years away, there were several planets with human life on it, just like ours. Technically, they were 117 years in advance of us, and that they even frequently visit Earth. Apparently, these were descendants of people who, after the Great Explosion and War of Atlantis, had kind of exited and taken up life there. They had not advanced very rapidly. They weren't far in advance of us. They were on the beginning stages of development of space travel. Their ships did not have the ability to jump into hyperspace. So consequently, they had space stations out in free space. It took them quite some time to get here to Earth. One of their problems is, and by the way, Billy said he calls this planet Akart, A-K-A-R-T. One of the situations is that they frequently come here for food. Their planet, at least one of them anyway, Ptah says, is overpopulated and has 23 billion people on it. We have 5 billion right now. So they have about 5 times as many people as we do. And he says their problem is that, like us, they become greatly overpopulated. We have too many people for the food chain. We're putting too much stress on the planet as it is. There's plenty of space for everybody. But when you have this many people, it puts tremendous stress on the social system, which ours is rather poor, all based on money, greed, and power. So the more people you have, the tougher it is to control the system. We still have a system of economics which is not designed for the general welfare. It's designed for the general welfare to keep them in line and to feed the rich people who designed the system. So in that respect, we're also overpopulated. And, of course, the food chain. Already we're into genetically engineering foods and so forth. And, of course, we affect nature because we're out of control with our technology. Well, this planet has 23 billion people on it, 5 times almost the population of the planet Earth. And they're coming here regularly for food. Ptah mentioned that most of the time when they come here, their ships are seen from time to time. Pictures are taken of them. But they don't take our food. They generally take seeds and plants and so forth back to their world and grow them and grow their own food and so forth. Apparently, they're a very kind, peaceful race. And they're not warlike at all. We have nothing to fear from them. And we probably will have no open contact with them for quite some period of time. This led into an explanation. Ptah was saying that probably around the year 2000, it's quite possible that we will probably have open contact with another race. He says comes about, that this race that's coming here will be human, similar to us. They'll look a little different. And that they will broadcast across space to the planet Earth that they're coming. There'll be a lot of pandemonium. There'll be a lot of fear. There'll be a lot of panic. But it won't be justified because they'll actually, when they get here, turn out to be a very peaceful race. No problems for us really at all, except that we're going to have to wake up to the fact that there really are ETs out there. Their ship will be very large egg-shaped, not a dish-shaped like the UFOs we're used to seeing, but it'll be a very, very large ship, and it'll look like an egg. And Billy asks, where's it going to land? Who are they going to contact? And Ptah says, the natural place is America. And Billy says, America? Why always America? What's this thing with everything happening in America? And Ptah says, America is the most logical place. One, because of the government, and the other is the fact that they will be concerned about their arrival causing panic on the planet, and that the American people are more open, more willing to accept UFOs, and by the time that time period gets here, remember we're speaking now in 75, so it will be 25 years, he says, by the time that happens, the American people will be greatly opened up to the idea of extraterrestrial contact, and there's far less chance of panic in America compared to other countries. Before they end here, before they drop Billy off, Billy, one more time is pressed by Ptah that to go out and do public speaking and to get this information out. That they've been watching Billy, and even though Billy has been saying all along that he's going to do this, that he's going to write lectures, and he's going to go out and talk, he still has not done it. And Billy keeps saying he's just not good at it. He does not want to do the public speaking thing, and that he's trying to get Hans Jacob, his friend, to do that. And Ptah's in agreement with that. Okay, Billy, if you really can't do the public speaking, then work with Hans. But it's not happening. So Billy's pressured one more time to, again, get out and do public speaking, which he has not done so far. Okay, Billy's returned to Earth, And little time goes by before the next contact. The next, there were a couple of short contacts telepathically. Actually, what happened for about the next month was that transmissions were sent to him by Ascot, who he has just reconnected with out in space, to help him get all of his notes together about his contacts in the 50s and 60s. And they are so extensive that I'm going to devote the next tape to that. So I'm going to kind of skip by that part right now and go on a little bit with Billy's other contacts here and finish this tape up, and then the next tape will devote to Billy's travels with Ascot and so forth. So we're going to jump ahead to September 12th in 1975 for Billy's 33rd contact. This one was kind of interesting because when Semyonovsky arrived, Billy had some things to tell her. He says that he had just witnessed the night before a beam ship of some type was hovering around the house, and he'd seen it on several occasions in the general area. And he couldn't make any mental contact with it. It didn't seem to be Pleiadian, but he couldn't understand who it was. Semyonovsky remarked to him, well, these are the ships of the Befath people that we'd mentioned earlier, that she was quite sure that they were watching Billy, probably planning on even kidnapping him. And Billy was a little surprised. He says, they would kidnap me? And she says, yes, that they knew that Billy was being contacted. They knew that he was being helped to be the prophet of our time, that they were having a lot of extensive contacts with him, that he was learning a lot of information. And this was directly going against their mission of controlling the planet. They really didn't want somebody coming along and telling the truth and helping organize people, that this was not in their best interest. So she was quite sure that they were probably up to no good and probably going to try to kidnap him, and suggested to Billy that he'd be very careful around them and not to, if they sent him any telepathic information, to come out or have a contact with him, to not do that, because he could probably would never be heard from again. That it was generally their normal MO to like attract people to the ships, telling them that they were in touch with God or that they were in touch with Jesus, whatever, and that they were gods and so forth, and they were sent here on behalf of a god. That was their general mode of operation, that the Earth people were very susceptible to that, that they could be drawn into their ships quite easily and drawn into their control very easily by telling Earth people that they were somehow here on behalf of some god or on behalf of Jesus. And the people were, many people, especially the Christians, were quite prone to believing that, wanting to believe it, and this would allow the Befath actually to control them and build up their own followers here on Earth. Well, after that was explained to him, Billy says, well, a friend of his named Jakob had received a letter from some other man who claimed that he'd been in touch with a being from Alpha Centauri some time back. And the man had gone to the trouble of describing all about these contacts and this being from Alpha Centauri, and Billy wanted to know if it was true. And Semyonovsky says, yes, it is. We're aware of these contacts, and we know of this man. He's one of the genuine contactees, but they didn't give his name, and the name wasn't in the letter. She did say it was true that the being was from Alpha Centauri, and that his name was spelled S-E-F-H, Seth. It's kind of like Spath and all these other names you're hearing. Quite most of these names I don't think are very accurate, either the names of the people or the names of the planet. I think they're mostly just labels given to us by the Pleiadians for reference, or their names that Billy uses and so forth, whatever, just to label things. So we're not real sure about these actual names. But it says this being from Alpha Centauri was here for 11 months. And that it was sometime back, it was before 1975, before Billy's contacts had actually started with the Pleiadians. But this man had written to Billy through Jakob, because the being from Alpha Centauri, who understood how to look into the future and see things, told the man during his 11 months of contacts that there would be contacts between the Pleiadian race and Billy starting at this time. And that's why the man had written. His contacts were actually over and had been discontinued. Apparently what had happened, the being from Alpha Centauri, seeing the problems on planet also, much like the Pleiadians had, had decided to try to help out and feed information into our society also through this gentleman. Spent some time educating him, much like Semyonovsky had been educating Billy, but the man decided not to come forward, pretty much like Billy had. Billy didn't want to come forward either into the public arena. This man had decided that he would not do it, and so the contact stopped, and the being from Alpha Centauri gave up the idea and returned home. But the contacts were real. Billy right away wanted to know who this guy was. And Semyonovsky remarked, no, that it would not be fair for us to tell you who this man is, because he's already made his own decision to be private, and they respect that. Well, and Billy said that he would, how about if he just went to meet him? And she again remarked that, no, he'd made the decision of his own free will now to not come out into the public arena any longer, and they were going to respect that. We're all on our own path of evolution, and they were not going to violate that. Well, Billy had received some information from another UFO group from Berlin, and these people were followers of something called the Ashtar Command, and he wanted to know about this. And wanted to know if Semyonovsky had any information about this Ashtar Command outside of Berlin. And Semyonovsky says, well, we have some information, but not too much. We've been looking into ourselves, and they really didn't know much about it. And Billy says, well, come on, surely you know something. She says, well, all we know so far is that these people in Berlin are part of what's called the Thule Society, T-H-U-L-E. And this is a very old society that has done a lot of damage on the planet. The Thule Society itself are Earth people, but they are influenced by some outside extraterrestrial force. And the Pleiadians have been trying to figure out where this was coming from. They'd been trying to figure out where the thoughts were coming from. They had searched our planet, a parallel planet, other dimensions, and quizzed other life forms that were coming here, and could not figure out exactly where the source of these mental images were coming from that was controlling this Thule Society in Berlin. But she says it dates back a long ways, because the Thule Society was part, they were the people that were involved in controlling Hitler. They were one of the main reasons where Hitler took the wrong path with his changing of the world that he was intent upon, and went the way that he did and kind of fell to the dark side of things. But they'd been trying to trace these energies and could not really do it so far. All they could tell was that the thoughts were coming directly into Germany, into this Thule Society, and that they were trying to find out the source of it. And if they did, they'd sure let Billy know more a little bit about it. Ashtar was somehow connected with this, but they really hadn't figured out who this Ashtar person was. In my magazine I used to put out, I had a section that I called The Mysteries of Earth, because there are a lot of unexplained mysteries like the pyramids, the Bermuda Triangle, Easter Island, things like this, that traces of unusual things that have happened on our planet that we really don't have any explanation of. Well, quite often Billy would ask questions about them, and most of all those mysteries have been explained at one point or the other. I'm just going to go over one or two of them here on the tape. The Great Pyramid, by the way, which we'll find out later on, was actually built by the Fath 75,000 years back. But right now I want to talk a little bit about the Bermuda Triangle, because its cause and its origin are really quite unusual. The Bermuda Triangle, we've all heard these unusual stories about ships disappearing, boats, airplanes, people, and so forth. A lot of strange phenomena over the past several hundred years. Well, Semyonovsky remarked that, yes, it's true, there has been a lot of disappearances. To begin with, she says it has nothing to do with the devil. Many people are mistakenly relating the events in the Bermuda Triangle to Satan or something. She says that's not true. To begin with, there is no such person actually as Satan. There is no devil. This is just a man-made concept. It's something created out of Christianity to create fear, out of control. But there really isn't any devil. There is, of course, good and bad, moral and immoral and so forth throughout the universe. And there are, of course, good people, good aliens, and bad ones, so forth. So good and bad does exist, but there is no actual devil doing something to the people of the Christian world. So you can't blame it on that. She says some of the events of the Bermuda Triangle are caused by our own people, that there was for a time period a band of pirates who, having heard about the mysterious things in the Bermuda Triangle, seized the opportunity to hide in the cargo of many different ships when the ship would sail into that area, they would come on board, kill all of the people on board, and disappear with the goods, and people would just think it was some mysterious thing. And they got away with it that for a long period of time. But that certainly was not responsible for most of the really unusual disappearances. She said what was going on for a long period of time, and it's over now, by the way, it ended sometime in the 80s, she says that there were two very large suns a long ways away. She didn't say how far, but the radiations from these suns took about 720 years to get here. And apparently what had happened, there was a freak thing going on where the high-frequency radiations from these suns, two different suns, collided when they kind of hit or came to an apex on the planet Earth, and that there were three different places on the planet Earth where this effect in the Bermuda Triangle would happen. These radiations, when they would come together, would put kind of a rip or a tear in the fabric of time, causing just perhaps for a few seconds or a few moments for there to be a window into another dimension open. And what would generally happen when this window would open up, caused by these freak radiations, if there was a plane or a ship or whatever in the area, they would somehow slip right into this other dimension. They would just instantly find themselves into another time frame, another dimension, on another world, on another Earth just like this, where they had no idea where they were and what would really happen. She then began to explain to Billy a little bit about what a dimension door actually looked like. And she took a pencil and drew a picture. And if you look in your exhibit manual, I'll have a little drawing in there that you can kind of look at that'll help you with that. That if you, for a moment, if you don't have something to look at, you can kind of imagine it. It looks like a spiral. She says if you could see a dimensions door, it looks a little bit and acts a little bit just like a cyclone or what a tornado actually does. That if you swirl some energy around in a spiral fashion, that there are different parts to this spiral now that have different effects. That the center part, whatever, if you look into the center of a spiral of a time door, a dimension door, that you'd actually see into the other dimension. That the way they get into the other dimension, the passageway, is actually off to the edge. And that what is necessary to do, through technology, they learn to screen or protect the ships in a certain way that they can move into this other dimension somehow and then actually be able to return. Any object or ship that would fly directly into the center of this dimensions door without the proper technology to come back would be stuck there forever. And this is the case in what happens with the ships and airplanes and individuals and so forth that actually slip into it. She remarked also that this structure of the dimension door, this whirling large storm effect where it looks like it's spinning, this is actually also seen in tornadoes, in galaxies, in other energy forms in our universe. This is a very common way that one dimension actually is opened up into another. And you'll see on the drawing what I mean when you look at there, that it does look kind of like a cyclone. It's calm in the center, and the storm rages actually out on the edges. Just before the dimension door is about to open up, it'll be very quiet. Nature seems to kind of freeze, and the temperature will warm up a little bit. Very much just like people observe before tornadoes or cyclones. So she drew this and remarked to Billy that in throughout the microcosms and macrocosms of the universe, that this same theme, the same concept of moving from one dimension to the other is relevant throughout. Apparently this theme of storms is the matrix, I guess you might say, which causes the same thing to happen here on the planet in cyclones. So this passageway is one way that you get from one dimension to the other. They had opened up very erratically from time to time in the Bermuda area, causing ships to slip off into this. Actually, they would slip into the very near future, she said. Most of them would just move forward a little bit in time. So I've often thought it may be possible someday that many of these ships that have flown into that may start reappearing at some point. Every now and then we hear about in the National Enquirer newspapers like this where unseen objects have appeared, apparently from nowhere. Well, they may be the result of some of these accidents that have happened in the Bermuda Triangle. By the way, that effect is over. The planet Earth is now moved, physically moved, out of the area where it's affected by the radiation from these suns. And she says that effect will no longer happen, at least not for those particular reasons. The other two areas, by the way, where that effect also happened was close to Madagascar and off the coast of Japan. Quite often, sometimes, the same events would happen, but they were not as well known. Apparently, they weren't wherever these other two places weren't on well-known trade routes where the stories of missing ships would actually happen or would be told, or possibly they just didn't happen very much. Okay. Billy also had a question about apparitions, like there are apparitions, people claiming that they've seen the Mother Mary or that they've seen other religious figures or stones bleeding and things like this, and he wanted to know if she had any comments on that. She remarked that in most cases, well, all cases that they knew of, that they were always fake. The apparition itself wasn't fake, but this the intent of it was, that the apparitions would generally be caused by the Bafath or other ET intelligence, which come here occasionally, which are also rather wicked, and they would create these apparitions for people to see. People would think that they were actually coming in contact with the Mother Mary, and they really weren't. It was just another way of controlling people that wanted to believe these things. They would then become followers of whoever was instigating or claiming these, taking credit for these things. And it caused people to believe more and more in myths that just simply are not true. Next interesting thing that really kind of happened about this time period, Billy was told by Semyasi, or actually asked by Semyasi, if he would use the mental capabilities that he had been taught to throw his thoughts over into America to take part in a rather unusual thing that's going on there. She says there is something called the Siboney's Liberation Army that is going to cause a major catastrophe on the planet if they aren't stopped, and she wanted Billy to become involved. Well, Billy, even though his mental powers, he'd been experimenting with astral projection and other things, were very strong, he was kind of surprised that they would suggest this, and said, why don't you just take care of it yourself? She says, well, we really can't get involved and we don't want to, but we feel that you should, because here's what's going to happen. That the SLA, which is William and Emily Harris, Wendy Yoshimura, and Patty Hearst, actually could accidentally trigger a nuclear blast in San Francisco, causing a major world catastrophe. And they suggested that Billy send thoughts to the FBI and the police there where they were hiding out so they could be captured. They then showed Billy a map of the Mexican-American neighborhood where these people were hiding out, and after it was explained to Billy to all the problems that they could actually cost and the major loss of life that could come from this if he didn't, Billy agreed to do it. And Billy says that he actually then, that evening, sent mental transmissions to a Mr. Charles Bates of the FBI, letting Mr. Bates know where the hideout was. He then sent the same information broadcasted to the San Francisco police, and which led, he says, to the arrest and capture of the SLA. So he somehow was involved there. It's interesting to note that the Pleiadians themselves didn't want to do it, that they had Billy do it. One other time he was also involved in something just like that. They were told, Billy was told at one point that the Bafath, again, were up to their no-good tricks again, and had a man in Walport, Oregon, telling people that the extraterrestrials were coming, that they were going to be saved, and if they gave up all their worldly possessions, that they could come to Walport, Oregon, and that the ship would come and pick them up and take them to a planet which was far more beautiful, where life would be much nicer than it is here on Earth. And that many people, 20 of them that they knew so far, were giving up their possessions and actually doing this. And this was a rather wicked thing that the Bafath were again doing to control people and to destabilize things. And they wanted Billy to see what he could do about helping with that. And one more time again, Billy used his own mental abilities to somehow aid the local police there, make them aware of what's going on, and to stop that particular action. Well, we move up now to the 36th contact, which was on Monday, October 20th, 1975. This again brought up some, this contact brought forth some unusual things that were happening now. As Billy's contacts continued, He was now put in contact and received telepathic transmissions by a what he thought was a feminine entity calling itself Patali. Now, previous to this, he had been put in contact with another entity called Arahat Athrasada, which was the teacher that Emmanuel, the man known as Jesus Christ, experienced 2,000 years previous. This entity was the teacher that taught Emmanuel, and Billy was also put in touch with this entity, Arahat. And I've skipped over that part because this is directly related, of course, to the information all about the Talmud and the Emmanuel information we're going to go over later. So I'm going to, on those tapes, the Talmud Emmanuel tapes, I'll get a little bit more into Arahat. But Billy at that time had been receiving information from Arahat, which was a light being. And now he was in contact suddenly with some other entity, telepathically, called Patali. And he wasn't sure who this was. Patali entity described itself as a we-form consciousness, and that it was going to send him some transmissions, and Billy wanted to know what's going on. Sannyasi told him that this entity, unlike Arahat, was what's called a we-form. It no longer had awareness of male or female, he or she, that it was a collective consciousness of the highest order, and that it would be, you'd have to consider it an I. But they just called it a we, because it was a collective group. And that this entity was coming in contact directly with Billy on purpose to explain the Ten Commandments. That there were some mild differences in them as to the original drafting with Moses years back. They've been altered somewhat, and that they thought it'd be a good experience for Billy to write them back down and re-put this information back out. And he did. He published a book called The Decalogue, which is the Ten Commandments. There were actually 12. And they really don't vary too much, but the explanations of them were a little bit slightly different than what we've heard. That book, unfortunately, is not published. If I have time later on the tapes when we talk about the creation information, I have the Decalogue book, and I'll go over that just a little bit, but I don't have time here. But she wanted to draw out that the Patali life form, that's what it was, and that he would not be able to ask questions or communicate directly with the Patali form because it was of the very highest frequency. That somehow the information from the Patali was being transmitted through the High Council of the Pleiadians somehow through their own particular meditation. They meditate, receive the information. The frequency then is downscaled to where Billy could actually perceive it. And then that information was moved on into Billy so he could receive these telepathic transmissions. Because normally, beings of that high, their thoughts are of such high frequency that you couldn't perceive them anyway. So that was the process that was going to happen. That would continue on, by the way, throughout, and he will write that book called The Decalogue. So I'm not sure what to do about that book. I think possibly if I don't have time as I'm making these tapes, that what I may do is, okay, we'll make a decision right here. In the exhibits, I will write out the Ten Commandments again with a brief explanation of them so you'll know anyway what Patali has transmitted to Billy. Okay? There had been so much discussion here about Bafath and the Thule Society coming up in the last few contacts. Billy had some questions about Hitler because she had suggested earlier that the Thule Society had somehow intervened in the life of Hitler. So he wanted to know more about that. And she explained that, yes, that Adolf Hitler, originally when he was born, they were watching him and so forth because they knew that a man of great, what they called a man of brains, had been born. His spiritual evolution wasn't very high, but his brain power was very strong, and in some manners he was quite the genius. He, unlike most people on earth, had a very good understanding of the uses of the forces of nature. And throughout his life had used that. We all know how charismatic he was and how strongly he was able to influence masses of people. This probably is where that came from. They knew he was destined to change the world because he was mentally so powerful. But it was believed early on that it would be a change for the good. They were quite, not surprised, but they were quite unhappy when apparently during his reign of power, he was kind of overcome with the ego of all of it and the power of it. And the Thule Society, who were being influenced by some extraterrestrial force which they weren't aware of yet, had actually turned him towards the dark forces, and he really couldn't resist. Apparently, Hitler knew and was having contacts and knew a lot about the Jewish race and how historically they had caused many problems. And it was his idea to better the planet through trying to clean up the genetics of the planet. And it was unfortunately the Thule Society that pushed him into the idea of just wiping out the Jewish race instead of just dealing with them. So here was a man who was of great brain power, who originally had a good idea that he was going to try to raise the consciousness of the planet, and he was going to try to raise the level of knowledge of the people of the planet through a master race idea, but it had gone astray. She said that at this point, they had learned more about the Thule Society, though, and this Ashtar Sharam, and the last name is spelled S-H-E-R-A-N, is the way Billy spells it. She said they had finally discovered where these transmissions were coming from that was affecting the Thule Society and creating this Ashtar cult of people. She says the Ashtar Sharam, actually, his real name was Arusek, A-R-U-S-E-A-K. That he was a cousin of the Bafath people. And she went on to explain that near as they could tell, somewhere back in the 1920s, this Arusek had split off from the Bafath to form his own group, and apparently going on his own and trying to better himself. And that the Pleiadians had discovered that Ashtar, or this Arusek individual, had changed his name and was no longer in the Earth plane, but was transmitting telepathic influences to the Thule Society to create forces on the planet Earth. And he used what they called telehypnosis. It was something like that, where you could actually hypnotize someone telepathically somehow. And that's what this Arusek individual is actually up to. So since 1920, we've had this Ashtar person trying to influence certain elements on the planet, in particular the Thule Society, through some rather wicked means. It has become known also through the Pleiadians that his general modus operandum is to convince people that he somehow is a god and that Jesus somehow travels with him, so people who are prone to wanting to believe that will do so and, of course, follow into his legions. He also even tells people that Moses, he's been around since the time of Moses, and that Moses himself got the Ten Commandments from him on his ship, which isn't true either. But it is possible to receive information from him, apparently.